Lakeisha Benjamin is a charismatic and dynamic saxophonist and band leader. When you see her on stage, you'll first notice how fly she's dressed, but not only that, how amazingly dynamic her sound is. The sound she produces from the saxophone is really like no other. She's shared the stage with so many artists, from Stevie Wonder to The Roots to Mark Carey and Macy Gray and Alicia Keys and so many others, and continues to tour with her band Soul Squad. She has a brand new album in tribute to John and Alice Coltrane called Pursuance, the Coltranes, and she joins me right now in the WBGO studio for this installment of The Pulse. Welcome, Lakeisha.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm doing pretty good.
First of all, this music is just a moving tribute and an homage, if you will, to the greats being John and Alice Coltrane. Why was it important to you to pay tribute not just to John, but to Alice Coltrane as well on this record?
I felt that if I was to even go back to my beginnings and search like how I started into jazz, I knew about Alice Coltrane before John Coltrane.
Really?
One of my friends, Georgia Ann Muldrow, she's kind of like my best friend, actually, but she was listening to an Alice Coltrane CD once and, you know, asked me had I heard of her, and I was like, no, I haven't. So we listened to the music. The album was, I think, Patah El Daoud, and it was so, like, amazing for me. Like, I played this album over and over and over again. And back then, I used to go back and look at all the little album liner notes and stuff, yeah, and, like, to pick out the musicians I was gonna listen to their music next. And on this album, she had Pharoah Sanders and Joe Henderson.
Mm.
So I was already kind of familiar with them. So I was searching, and Rashid Ali was on it, and I was playing in Rashid's band at the time. So I took a mental note to ask him about it. And then, you know, I had all her albums spread out, and I kind of was reading through the pamphlets. And then I saw a mention of something about this song is for John Coltrane or something. So I was like, I wonder if she has a brother. You know, so I, like, you know, started researching him. And then that's when, like, the whole world started spiraling. I was like, wait a minute. This is, like, another level.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I don't know, artists like Alice Coltrane and Pharoah Sanders and Sun Ra, they were, like, on a different wavelength, if you will. If you study, you know, spirituality and the moon and the stars and all of that, they definitely had something else happening outside of the mainstream. Is that what drew you into wanting to pay tribute to her?
In terms of paying tribute to both of them, my original concept for the album is I wanted to pay homage to, like, all the jazz legends that I could think of that I grew up, like, hearing about and loving, like, seeing with Miles Davis, seeing playing with John Coltrane. And I wanted to find a way to pay homage to them while they were still alive. Mm-hmm. So I started by writing a list of who is still here and who do I admire. And once I started finding that list, that's how I came up with Ron Carter. That's when I came up with Reggie Workman and Dee Dee and everybody. And then as I was looking at that list of people and Gary Bartz, I was like, who in the world is better than these people?
So how did you, because it's a testament to your talent that you were able to gather so many people for this project. How were you able to do that? Tell me about the process of even approaching people to join you on this album, Pursuance.
I would say it was kind of an ambitious situation. It wasn't like, now that the project is finished and done, it all seems like, oh my God, you asked all these great people to play and they all wanted to do it and it's so amazing and yay, WBGO party. But it kind of started with a lot of no's, and there are a lot of people that were asked that are not on the project. I'm somebody that dreams big, and I started out with what would be my dream album. I was like, let's start at the very top and then see where we land on the podium. So I asked a bunch of people, and, you know, some said yes, some said no, some weren't sure. It took a lot of hounding, a lot of hunting them down, a lot of emails, a lot of showing up at houses.
Wow.
Showing up at gigs. It took a lot of, perseverance. But I was, kind of determined that someone in my generation has got to do it.
And obviously they believe in you and your talent. And because you cast that wide net, you were able to bring back some greats like Ron Carter. My
yeah.
goodness. Gary Bartz. Regina Carter's on here. Your friend, Georgia Ann Muldrow. You got The Last Poets. Dee Dee Bridgewater. Whoa. That's crazy. Tell me about Pursuance, even the title. Why did you go with Pursuance to name this album?
I guess when I think of John and Alice Coltrane together, I always kind of always have thought of them as like yin and yang. They both are striving for the same goal, but in different ways. I always think, you know, we think of John Coltrane, his talent. We think of like his technical ability. We think of how much he struggled early on in life and then later found more spirituality, more different things. So I was trying to think of what could encompass both of them as artists and also still be true to what I'm going through as I'm doing this project.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like one thing and one, whenever I talk to Reggie, if I used to talk to Rashid about it, they always let me know that they were serious about the music, serious about their dedication to, you know, 12, 15 hours a day practicing it. And they were serious about 24 hours a day being in touch with the creator and whatever God that they felt close to, and that music was here to heal and to change people's lives. So for me, in the course of going through this project, I always tried to keep that in mind. And even with my music that I've written outside of this, I'm always trying to figure out what can I play and do to actually move and kind of touch somebody in some type of way. So I called it pursuance because I felt like not only was I pursuing and chasing the talent that the Coltranes have, that all my guest artists have, but I'm pursuing trying to find some kind of way of how can I get closer with God and how can I somehow through that closeness with God, my music touch and elevate people.
So spirituality for you has been, sounds like an integral part of your creative process as well.
Absolutely. That's kind of why, you know, like we were talking a little bit earlier about it when we were saying who's better than Ron Carter or Reggie Workman. The reason why I thought it was John and Alice Coltrane is not necessarily they had something different, but they're a generation ahead, but they also, that's what they encompass, you know what I mean?
Yeah. They were always, it seems, thinking of what was next through their music. And you have adopted that same attitude. And even in the way that you move creatively, you can't be boxed in to a certain genre of music. Tell me how you've explored different sounds in this album in particular.
I think one of the crucial things that when I was thinking about arranging the songs is, you know, you get kind of caught up like Central Park West. John Coltrane did the most perfect job you can do with that. So it was how can I come up with a different arrangement of something that's already perfect.
And your version of the tune features Jasmine Horn.
Yes. So I felt that for myself, I should just arrange things in terms of what touches me and what moves me. But also, each song that had a guest, I tried to think about, almost like Charles Mingus, writing for their particular strength. So if Dee Dee Bridgewater's on something, I feel like her strength is the energy she brings to the crowd, the energy she brings when she's scatting, her skill set of just being able to capture people. So I wrote for that talent around the song and the arrangement. So that way I wouldn't have to worry about, oh, is this going to be a perfect A Love Supreme? No, John Coltrane did a perfect A Love Supreme. This is just going to be a different version that can help bring somebody else closer to jazz.
Let's get into Prima.
Okay.
Now, you have a full orchestra with you on this track. How many pieces in this orchestra?
It's not necessarily a full orchestra, but there's full strings. I'm not sure if I had the bass clarinet and flute for this as well. There's myself, there's piano, there's two bass players at the same time, plus the electric bass. There's the harp. Piano, bass, drums, you know, it's a whole definite feature. But that one and Going Home were definitely, the studio was a little stressed out with the amount of musicians because I wanted to record everything at the same time.
Now, Prima is an Alice Coltrane tune. Why did you choose this one in particular?
It's a song that I love. I mean, I've heard her play it solo piano. I've heard her play it inside of her ashram. I've heard her play it on several CDs. And the idea of the song is kind of that you're constantly playing the same thing over and over again like a drone. Each time you go through it, you're getting closer and closer to God. Things like that, that kind of like chanty, even when it comes to something in like, you
know, meditative in a way.
Even that's the way I think about, even when I think about my hip hop and funk. Like if I get on a theme and we can rock that line, you know, you think, listen to James Brown. Once he get on a groove, they wear that groove out. They don't just move around and try to. The idea is the deeper you get into the groove, the deeper you get into the soul of someone.
Right. It's like you're in a trance.
Exactly.
Here she is, Lakeisha Benjamin, Prima. Now, Lakeisha, you made some pretty significant sacrifices in order to create this album. You know, we talked earlier about how you cast this net in order to get people to work with you on this project. But not only that, you poured your own resources into the production of this album, Pursuance.
In terms of like the type of artist I am, even with my other two albums, I always tend to finance the projects and then look later, because I found, especially when you're an independent artist trying to do your own music, sometimes you believe in yourself before others do. So if I'm waiting for you to give me the money, we may never have a project. So when it came to this, literally the idea popped up kind of in my head out of the blue, almost like in July. We recorded this in August. The idea popped up in July. So I first, you know, figured out, could I get everybody together? And, you know, I had a little bit of money saved up. And when I say a little bit, I mean a little bit. And I definitely was a little naive in terms of not understanding the weight of what I was trying to do. I just tend to dream big. So I wasn't thinking like, oh, this may cost a little bit of money. It wasn't until the project actually started going and I started actually getting studio time and all this that I started to realize this is kind of in the big leagues. Yeah. You know, because once you get an established artist, you got to actually have a place kind of acceptable for them to come record. You can't just say, hey, let's do it in my grandma's house. You know, so I did, after a while, once I got into it and once I started believing in it so much, I did put pretty much probably all of my savings into it.
Wow. Now, that really is an inspiring nugget right there that you just provided, whether you know it or not. You have to believe in yourself before anybody else is going to be willing to believe in you. And so you invested in yourself. What advice would you give to someone else who may be afraid to pour their own money and resources and things like that into their creative project? Because that takes faith.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people sometimes, yeah, they give you excuses like, you know, whatever you want, you can make it happen. You know, and I'm always like, yeah, but there's rent and there's bills to pay. But during this project, I really started to see there was a moment when I got to the line where I had spent quite a bit of money. And I was like, you know, things may get a little tight here. And I had to make a decision. Am I going to keep moving forward and trying to accomplish this dream and seeing what happens? Or am I going to just actually stop and then I know what happens? And I feel like, especially since I have two albums already, I've played with quite a bit of people, I was willing to go into the uncharted area because it really meant a lot to me that I was paying homage to my guests and, you know, the legacy of John and Alice Coltrane, of course, but it really meant a lot to me that I feel like someone in my generation to pay tribute to the people that have come before. And I feel like strong about that. People in my generation are not doing that. And we're confident right now about, oh yeah, jazz is not what it used to be. We're changing it, we're mixing it up, we're fusing things. And yeah, of course we are, because we're spicy, we're new. You know, you grew up listening to like Biggie Smalls, that's what you're gonna do.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt prominent that every time I'm on Facebook or social media, we're losing a life of somebody that,
right,
you know, meant the world to us. And I wouldn't play the saxophone the way I did if it wasn't for John Coltrane. So when I got to that wall, especially after, you know, playing around for a little bit of time, I decided to throw all the cards in. I can always make more money, but I can't make more dreams.
You bring up a good point in paying tribute or bringing people their flowers while they're here, right? Now, it's that idea of Sankofa. Have you heard of that concept of Sankofa? You have to look back.
I've heard of it and I've seen the movie, yeah.
Yes, but you do have to look back in order to move forward. We have to remember those people who paved the way in this music in order to progress it forward, right?
Yes.
And you're definitely demonstrating that through this album. Now, Saida's Song Flute features Ron Carter and Keon Harold.
So all the pieces on the album I chose, because they both have so much work to choose from, I picked it by, if the first time I heard it, the first day I heard it, I loved it, then I was going to use it. So that narrowed it down to probably 100 songs per artist. But that's what I did. I was like, if this is a song that I've loved always, or maybe I love the way one of my guests played on that song, then I was going to go for it that way. So that's how that particular song came.
Are all of the songs that you recorded, did they make the album, or did you record a bunch of songs and then decide what would go on the album?
They all made the album. We recorded this album two 12-hour days in the studio back to back All the guests came in on a time chart, kind of. Like, you come at 1, you come at 12, you come at 3. And I tried to keep it together. At the time, I didn't even have any management. So I was, like, texting and playing.
Wow.
Come on, Greg Osby, come in. Play. So there was no time. Whatever made it was what we played.
So the album release concert is happening March 11th and 12th. You're going to have a full house of folks joining you at the concerts.
Yeah, first, Dee Dee Bridgewater will be there supporting. She's somebody that is very supportive of my career. So she'll be there March 11th and 12th. Regina Carter will be there on the 11th. Reggie Workman will be there the 11th and the 12th. Steve Wilson will be there the 11th. Greg Osby will be there the 12th. I think Marcus Strickland is also going to be there. I mean, it's a number of casts from the CD. I'm having Sharonay Wade sing with me. George is probably flying in. It's going to be and there'll definitely be several guest members in the audience, so I'll invite them up. The idea is kind of to celebrate the whole CD the best way we can.
And it sounds like it's really going to be just a family affair, like a jam session, if you will.
John and Alice Coltrane jam session, for
I love
sure.
It.
Yeah, we're going to do it at Dizzy's Coca-Cola Club.
So you've got a lot going on leading up until the actual album release, which is March 27th. Tell us about what you have going on.
We're going to be doing some dates at Blue Note Milan. We're going to be doing some dates in Poland for the Lotos Jazz Festival. The first gig I had with this band, believe it or not, was in China at the Blue Note Beijing.
Wow.
In Shanghai before everything went down. We'll do the CD release party the 11th and 12th at Dizzy's Coca-Cola, 7:30 and 9:30 sets. And then after that, immediately I'm heading to Ronnie Scott's in London. And yeah, I don't know if you guys are familiar with a guy named Guy Barker. He does a lot of arrangements for Gregory Porter, a bunch of his. He does orchestra. So he did a whole orchestral arrangement of the songs on the CD. And we're going to present that for, I think, 5 nights in London.
Wow, you are busy. Did you ever imagine that, you know, things would be happening like this for you, like one after the other, and the way that it is? It's like everything is falling in line.
No, I definitely didn't imagine that. I mean, back when I did my first CD, I wasn't aware you release CDs to have gigs. I just did a CD, and then someone said, oh, we gotta do a tour. And I said, oh, what's that? So now that I know these kind of things, you know, you never know when you, like I said, you gamble and you put something out there and you put your heart and soul into it. It could be a success. It could be a failure. It can be a success in 50 years from now. My goal was just to document what was done, because some of these guests have never even played with each other on the same CD. So to have Ron and Reggie together, something like that, it's something that I can say when I look back over time, this is something that I got a chance to do. And I, as well as my guests, I got a chance to be a part of something that I probably wouldn't have been a part of if I didn't put it together.
Right. You've made history.
Well, hopefully.
You are. You absolutely are. Well, thank you so much, Lakeisha Benjamin. And I wish you the very best of luck with Pursuance, the Coltranes. And, you know, really this project is a testament to when you put faith in yourself and your heart is in the right place, it's bound to succeed. So congratulations to you.
Thank you so much.
Where can we find out more about you and to get your music and to keep up with you?
Oh, great. So all of my social media handles are Lakeisha B, and you spell my name L-A-K-E-C-I-A, kind of like Lake CIA. And my actual website is LakeishaBenjamin.com.
I'd like to end with acknowledgement. This one features Dee Dee Bridgewater and The Last Poets. Come on now.
Just Abby O'Doom from The Last Poets.
Wow.
John Coltrane was a vessel. Taking us to the house of God. He spoke to God in the language God knew. Language of sound. Use his horn to talk to God, to express the love he had for him by loving us.